The mind of Blighty would be optimistic territory. I'm absolutely sure of it. Malcolm Blight, good morning.
Gerard, yeah, hi. Olympics. it's been something to behold, hasn't it? We love our footy, but it's taken a bit of a backseat, really.
It has. So you're a cockeyed optimist, Malcolm, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. I think I like the glass topped up.
To overflowing, I reckon.
Yeah.
To overflowing.
Yep. Well, I just had this theory in the good old days of coaching days. The only reason why you ended up getting beaten at any time was someone blew the siren on you.
You were going to win.
it was just a matter of time. These little fellas sit up the top there and blow sirens sometimes. And yeah, I actually played that card a number of times. You know, they blew the siren again. And it was almost a way of saying it was a pretty good performance. Look, we need to tidy a few things up. However, we've got to keep going. You know, we would have won it.
I'd like to explore one area with you, Malcolm, and that's the pre-match address. I think you would have soared in the pre-match address. How did you approach the moments where you knew you had to stir the passions of the players in front of you?
Everyone does it differently, I'd suggest. Your coaches, I believe a theme for the week, and it just may be, great defence, and contested ball. Well, that's all over here these days. But I'm sure that what happens inside, and you're not there, is that sometimes just to get a theme that might match the opposition you're playing, what we were looking to do on the ground this week, you know, we might have been actually saying, well, let's go a bit wider than what we've been, just whatever the theme is, work on that theme. And I used to try and find something that aligned to that. And it may not have been totally football, would have been football related, but not totally football, if you can understand that. And I think a lot of coaches do that as well.
Do any stick in your mind? 89 grand final, 94 semi-final, 07... 08 against the might of North, is what did you go for?
Yeah, no, I just the North one was Pagan's Paddock. We just couldn't let them past us, so we had to play from behind. But the one that really sticks out is, and I said I'd remember this forever, was in the 94 final series. I know it's a long time ago, but this is the theory of it. We had the four All-Australians were out the team in that year. Bairstow, Couch, Hocking and Mansfield, for those that remember that. Carlton were the top team. We had seriously no hope. You're four All-Australians and you're three best midfielders. But the talk I did, which wasn't a very long one at the start of the game, is it was an emotional plea that you will always remember this game if we can overcome the hurdle of these four being out, Carlton a great side that actually ended up going on to win the following year in a great year. And it was that you will take this with you and I will remember this till the day I die. Something along that, which is pretty strong to say.
Yep.
But I do. I still remember it because if the odds were 10% to 90 against us, it was probably that. It was the unwinnable everything. So I still take that one with me. And I promised the Geelong players at the time, I will never, ever forget this if we get across the line on this. This will be one of the great wins that this club's had. The funny part about it, and this is one of the great things of sport, no one ever knows this. I've never told this story. This is another story that, you go back in the dark annals of your brain and it comes out. As the siren went and Geelong had beaten the unbeatable, virtually Carlton team, I ran out the box at Waverley. And coming out the other box was David Parkin, the great coach, premiership coach the following year, came out the box and said, "Geez, Blighty, they played for you today." I was taken back by it.
Yep.
There's David. He's just lost the unlosable and had the time to actually say something to me. I've admired him forever because of that. And it was one of those wins that sometimes you say a lot of things. I'm not certain players listen. I'm not certain they remember when they're actually chasing the ball. But I reckon that day there was something happened in the air that made all that happen. So, yeah, they played for you today. So there is a time, and I used to say you get once or twice lucky a year. You make a great move as a coach or you say something that triggers something. You only get lucky a couple of times a year. The rest of it is really players generated and driven. But sometimes you do get lucky. That was a lucky day.
I reckon Brian Gorgian's got a little bit of Malcolm Blight in him the lead up to this. What about Ron Barassi? It could, if he went for it, can you remember as a player, how worked up could Ron get?
Very, if you want to put it in a word. Yeah, no, he could get, I used to, and I could too, I guess. And, you know, I used to call it, he used to get noisy. And he got, I can honestly say, he always got my attention. Now, did I listen to every word? Well, you were trying to, one of the things is when you coach, you do say a lot of things, and because you've got to say a lot of things. I mean, you've got to try and get a collective to start getting on some sort of page with you so that the belief comes. Now, a lot of players are self-driven. They don't need it. But others, you might just chip over a little bit. And I always figured that I went down and I was coaching, and this is in no way disrespectful, coach to the lowest common denominator. Now, that might be, you know, the 22nd player in a team now, or the, you know, the guy that doesn't quite take it all in quickly. So there's, you know, I'm not going to say dumb it down, but coach to the lowest common denominator, because the good ones and the great ones just do it anyhow. So I just don't ever overlook the bottom, you know, we know what the great ones can do, but I can tell you now, the last five or six in your team, supposedly on ability or actually intellect of the game, they're the ones that can actually dictate what happens.
Yep.
Good ones usually play pretty good. So, yeah, I bring a theme, nearly always brought a theme. It might have been a simple theme. It might have been just, let's kick it good today. You know, but then you go into other areas. And I know a guy like Kevin Sheedy was really keen on history and war history. Now, I probably didn't go down that track, but I went to a lot of other places, I can assure you.
Oh, I bet you did. The mind of Blight is exactly what we need this Thursday morning ahead of a great day of team sport at the Olympics. Blighty, I've been looking forward to talking to you for a week. That Alistair Clarkson scenario, which we've discussed a couple of times, played out in full dramatically. How did you take that in?
Yeah, look, I think if everyone had their time again, and I'm talking the whole hierarchy at North Melbourne, at Hawthorn, I think they would have done it slightly differently. You know, I mean, there's obviously been a great of the game. He's obviously been a great coach. He's well respected in the industry. And I think the fact that he maybe didn't want to go and the club wanted him to go, I think there could have been a sentence there. And at some stage or other, we're all big boys, and at some stage or other, if you stick around too long, both as a player, administrator, board member, or coach, you're going to get tiptoed out the joint. You know, it's just a matter of time. So once you say yes to all of that being involved in anything, in any walk of life, you're going to get tiptoed or you leave. Now, I think it could have been done slightly better. What's done's done. They've made their decision now. And I'll tell you what, Alistair Clarkson will go on and do something else, whatever that may be, and he'll be all right at it because he's already shown that. He's resilient, he's tough, and he's got some knowledge.
Do you hope he coaches again?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. And if that's his passion, of course I do. Now, you need the players. I mean, let's get clear on this. You know, premierships are won by players, but someone to guide them around the park, because they'd all want to play in the midfield. You know, they all want to get three votes and win Brownlows, generally speaking. So there's got to be some traffic control, and that's called a coach.
The idea of two coaches was clearly unsettling for the Hawthorn players. Do you understand that? Is having the coach for now and the coach for the future just can't work?
I did, but, we saw it with John Longmire and Paul Roos, and to a lesser degree, much lesser degree, Paul Roos and Simon Goodwin, because that was a short-term thing that Roosie was doing. But we also saw, you know, the handover of Collingwood from Malthouse to Buckley, and there just appeared to be friction there. I personally hate it. If you're asking me would I do it, no. I think clearly, in a competitive environment, there's got to be one boss. And if you take up Sheed's line on wars and battles, someone's got to be absolutely in charge and clear as a bell. And I think that's why I don't like it. People have chosen it to do it other ways, and some of it's worked. In our game in the last 20 years, one out of four's worked, probably.
And the study of Hawthorn during this patch and how it feels like what's happening behind the scenes has infiltrated their on-field play, the uncertainty and no good, and then they that they play with such resilience once matters are settled. It is, I know there's the X's and O's, but coaching's a lot more than that, clearly. The human condition has been at play right before our eyes.
Absolutely, it has. And one of the things is, it was a dynasty. Don't worry about that. You know, winning three in a row is, you know, just unbelievable what they did. But what actually happened was, I mean, they got, you know, they got lucky in the draft, and they got Hodge, Mitchell and Lewis. Now, you don't find them on trees. But what actually happened was, and because they had the formula getting Brian Lake, you know, getting Frawley, getting McAvoy, so I picked players around the competition, and then they thought they would replace Hodge, Mitchell and Lewis with the other Mitchell from the Swans and O'Meara and those type of players, and they haven't been of the ilk of the other three. You've got to say it. For whatever reason, that mixture wasn't the same as the other three. So they've tried to prolong by not going to the draft. They gave away draft picks, and that's fair enough. They're cool. They went for another one and another one, and it just hasn't worked. And generally speaking, that theory never works. It hasn't worked in the past with a lot of things. Eras come to an end. That little magical bit of group of players, just hard to replicate. You've got to go and do hard yards again because that's the rules.
And the last element in this discussion has been the referred pressure that has rolled onto Stuart Dew because of the idea, and I think it is only an idea and a theory, although I have been naive in this before. Does Stuart Dew now feel under pressure to you at the Suns?
Yeah, look, I think anyone not winning games enough and over a period of time... What's 4 years and hasn't won a lot of games. He's had a chance to make his mark, and I get it. But I guess he would get it too. I mean, he'd love to start winning. The team would start. I've never seen a player not want to win. I've never seen a coach not want to win. You know, sometimes you just dealt the cards you are. They had a lot of injuries. I think at one stage they had 6 or 7 knee injuries. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, how can you run a football club with that? So until some of those troops come back, they're going to still struggle. And hey, that's your lot in life. Sometimes you get dealt those cards. They're hard to deal with, but someone will deal them with for you.
We're in the mind of Blighty on a Thursday morning. Malcolm Blight for the official AFL Select Footy Stars collector cards.
I'm sure Jack would admit this. It's not something that we want to see in our game. I understand it as well as anyone. You know, it's an emotional game at times, and things happen, but it's certainly something that we want to stomp out. And we want to make sure that as players, we're conducting ourselves in a way that we're not only proud of individually, but also if you're looking at those around and those young kids watching, that it's something to strive for and not something to be disappointed with.
Patrick Dangerfield, the president of the Players Association, with me yesterday on the Jack Viney 2-match suspension for an action that we really haven't seen in the game before. How did you read that scenario, Malcolm?
Well, we've seen it occasionally. Yeah, I didn't like it one little bit, to be perfectly honest. Now, Jack Viney's an experienced player. I always put this in the reverse. Imagine his father, Jay Viney, who played for Melbourne, was a pretty good player. If Jack was a young player and that was done to him, how do you reckon his father would have felt? How does Jack Viney, if he had a son and watching his son play and that was done to him? Now, we've seen some action overseas that has created furor around the world with a similar type action. You can't tell me that this hasn't happened before. It has. And I saw it on the couch or even on 360, Jared. You might have showed it. One of the shows did. That this happened a while ago. See, and I'll go back to the sling tackle, right? The first bloke that got found got 1 week. I'd given 2 for the second, 3 for the third, 4 for the fourth, and 5 for the fifth.
Yep.
This is dangerous stuff. If you're going to be fair dinkum, and this is what annoys me about the AFL and the judiciary of the AFL, there's a lot of older people, like my vintage and younger, say, oh, that was a tough one. It wasn't tough. It was never tough in my day. It wasn't tough in 1930. It's absolute rubbish. And I reckon this, and I agree with everybody, those sorts of things that create mayhem, the elbow being thrown back, which you highlighted, and I do too. Lucky that no one got him. Well, there's no luck involved in this. Don't throw your elbow back. Go and have a holiday for 3 or 4 weeks. And I'd do the next one 5 weeks, and I'd go round A lot of people have got a lot of time in this game. Go round and show every club, if you do this again, it's 4 weeks for the next bloke. Go and someone go around and tell every club. And then it's 5 weeks. And so then the media, who say, oh, that's bad for five, how can you give that 5 weeks? Shut up, media. This is the rule. So someone start leading on this and we won't have this happen again.
Blighty, the front page of today's advertiser, Tex Faces Racism Probe. It's a scenario within Adelaide, which is difficult to navigate, I think, for them, separate to the gravity of what was said, and now it's an AFL investigation. How big is this going to be in your town?
Yeah, totally unexpected. I'm a bit flabbergasted. I know nothing about it, and I don't think many, many people do. And the only thing you can comment on, really, is that I just don't understand how this happens. I can't fathom how this would happen. It's not on my radar. It never has been. I don't get it. Accusation, even. I don't know. We'll wait and see how it unfolds or something. But as I said, this is beyond me.
Is it... So the Crows have escalated it to the AFL, which makes Walker's position with the Crows a little bit difficult to interpret as the investigation happens.
Yeah, as I said, I think, you've got to be careful, throwing arrows before the bow or the string is strung. But, I don't know. I can't imagine this. Why this would be out there, and even the suggestion of it happening is beyond me completely.
Glenn's with us in Broadmeadows on the topic. Hello to you, Glenn.
I think that the AFL's done so much good work, as has the Adelaide Football Club, about racial vilification. If Walker's done this, I think the club need to sack him, and otherwise it's just hypocritical. You can't be out there preaching and at the same time have your leader or one of your main leaders making those sort of horrendous comments.
So it's already a powerful stance, I think, to send it to the AFL's integrity unit. And now there's an obligation to wait to see what is established and then what if the AFL believes there should be action. And then very specifically, whether it rolls back to Adelaide for them to judge. So I understand that view, Glenn. And the one thing we'd sit over it is let's let the investigation sort the facts and then see what the actions are. Blighty, I got one more I've been itching to ask you is, how do you solve a problem like West Coast? Repeat offenders in this manner.
Yeah, I'm a great believer there is a time. They've been a wonderful footy club. They've withstood all sorts of things. They've won premierships. They've been the best addition to the competition by far. In the way they've gone about it, they've travelled the most miles over 30-odd years or whatever it is. They've been a great footy club. But like every one that has their day, a bit like Hawthorn, a bit like Brisbane maybe, you have your down times. They've got a lot of All-Australians in that team. They should be playing better, but two things happen. Retirements, age, injury, salary cap, all catch up with every team. That is the system. And sometimes you get a bit disillusioned by what players used to be able to do but can't do now. However, they've been a proud footy club. What happens from here, who knows? I'm only guessing, like everybody else. But, yeah, you have your time. And I think maybe those great warriors, your legs get a bit weary in the end and your mind gets a bit weary. And sometimes, no matter how hard you try, you cannot resurrect what happened before.
Blighty, you've set a perfect tone for us this Thursday. Enjoy today's and tonight's viewing at the Olympics, and we'll talk ahead of round 22 next week.
Thanks, Jared.
Good on you. Malcolm Blight for the official AFL Select Footy Stars collector cards for serious collectors, big and small.